Sponsorship of this KQED podcast is provided by Menlo Park Dental Excellence, providing general dentistry with quality care to all patients, serving patients one at a time with no triple booking, flexible hours Monday through Saturdays, mpdentalexcellence.com.
Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. State prison officials can legally force-feed hunger strikers. U.S. District Judge Thelton Henderson gave the go-ahead yesterday after state lawyers argued there's a risk some inmates may have been coerced into participating. The hunger strike began July 8th, and according to officials, 136 inmates are now refusing meals, 69 of them continuously since the start of the protest over conditions in the system's security housing units. KQED's Elaine Corey has more.
The hunger strike has entered its seventh week, and the risk of an inmate dying or sustaining severe bodily harm is growing each day. Joyce Hayhoe, a spokeswoman for the federal receiver that oversees health care services for inmates, says the order provides clarity for medical staff.
It allows our doctors to understand when they should and should not step in to save an inmate's life.
Until now, the policy of corrections officials at the CDCR has been not to force feed a striker who signs a medical directive or do not resuscitate order. But the CDCR sought a court order granting doctors authority to give inmates intravenous fluids. The order, signed Monday by U.S. District Judge Thelton Henderson, invalidates any health care directive signed by an inmate since the strike began. CDCR spokeswoman Terry Thornton says the change is justified.
There's information that inmates have been coerced into taking part in this hunger strike and signing do not resuscitate directives under coercion or duress. This seeks to protect those inmates from serious harm.
Involuntary feeding in the form of intravenous fluids containing vitamins and mineral supplements would have to be ordered by a doctor and take place in a medical facility. It would be allowed only when a doctor judges that an inmate is critically ill or near death. The prison law office chose not to fight the state's request. For the California Report, I'm Elaine Corey.
Massive open online courses, or MOOCs, have generated a lot of excitement and political heat because they promise to revolutionize education, or at least make it cheaper to offer students the classes they need to graduate. San Jose State University was one of the first to start experimenting with a pilot program, but as KQED's Charlotte Bear reports, most of the students failed the courses.
Markham Martz doesn't want his 18-year-old son, Sam, to end up like so many California college students, stuck in school for more than 4 years.
Getting classes, I think, is really a challenge for kids these days.
So Martz signed Sam up to take an online computer programming course through San Jose State and Silicon Valley MOOC developer Udacity. Martz signed up, too, so he could help his son out.
Right off the bat, it became fairly obvious that the course content, the quizzes, the assignments, and the way in which the class proceeded had not been beta tested thoroughly, if at all.
He might let that slide if the class was a normal free MOOC, but Martz paid $150 each for him and Adam to take the class and get college credit. It meant extra assignments, access to instructors, and actual grades. This is the model universities hope will get more kids through bottleneck classes, like entry-level math and science, and on to graduation. But the first semester, 80% of students in remedial math failed. In elementary statistics, roughly half failed.
We clearly should not be trying to take this Orville and Wilbur machine, you know, across the Atlantic Ocean.
Professor Peter Hadrius chairs the philosophy department at San Jose State.
It's treated as if it's the Concorde and it's all ready to go. But in fact, it's a way of teaching that is in a very formative stage.
Hadrius is not just concerned about his school's Udacity pilot. Variations on MOOC's experiments are showing up in lots of different places, like when San Jose State administrators asked Hadrius's department to replace lectures in an ethics class with a Harvard MOOC. After watching the online course, the San Jose philosophy faculty wrote an open letter in protest. Hadrius says it would be insulting to force diverse state university students to watch the Ivy League professor lecture to his affluent class.
He would have interpolated into his talks and dialogues how privileged they were. They were, for the most part, or certainly to a greater extent, white than our student body. So we got, on the one hand, this strange sort of upstairs-downstairs situation where the lower class people could look at how the upper class people were being educated.
Another problem is something called the digital divide. Some students in the first semester Udacity pilot didn't have computers. Then there's the P word.
Probably the greatest worry that instructors have is the privatization.
MOOC providers are for-profit companies. Right now, they live off venture capital and give their content to universities for cheap or free. Of course, that can't last. So the question is, who will pay for the months of work it takes to turn instructors' lectures into scripts, shoot dozens of videos, and edit together the polished package?
It's been an enormous amount of time, and I had no idea when I signed up for it just how much time.
Susan Snesersky is a full-time lecturer at San Jose State. She jumped at the chance to co-develop an intro to psychology class for the Udacity pilot. She's proud of her work, but says the hours, criticism, and politics have been rough.
I would continue teaching my course. I wouldn't make a new course.
Why would you maybe not with the other four classes that you teach?
I think I'm just done. Yeah, right now I'd take a breather.
So will everyone else at San Jose State. After seeing the project's initial results, University President Mo Kayomi agreed to put it on pause.
As we look at new approaches, sometimes we may need to go back and adjust that one and learn from it. The university should be the place for all exploration.
Parent Markham Martz wants universities to be more innovative, but says his experience as a guinea pig in the MOOC pilot seemed caught up in high-tech hype.
This reminds me an awful lot of Windows Vista and Apple Maps. Throw the spaghetti up on the wall to see if it sticks. That's fine if you're putting out a free application, but when it's college course curricula, I think they need to get it right.
San Jose State is working on version 2.0. There's a lot still riding on the experiment's success. Silicon Valley companies are looking to profit. Colleges are looking for ways to make education cheaper. The National Science Foundation is watching, too. It gave money to the project and expects to have a detailed report later this month on what went wrong. For the California Report, I'm Charlotte Baer in San Jose.
That's the California Report for Tuesday, August 20th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by URS, a global engineering and construction firm working to improve California's public infrastructure, preserve the state's natural resources, and strengthen the environment. URS.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And the California Endowment. Health happens with prevention at calendow.org.